Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org. And from Floridians for Lawsuit Reform. Property insurance bills in Florida have been skyrocketing due to rising litigation, affecting millions of Floridians. Learn more about solutions at fltortreform.com. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Florida Democrats challenge their Republican colleagues in the legislature on transgender sports and COVID misinformation.
Having a radiologist determine how your epidemiology is going to work is like having a podiatrist fix your teeth. It's probably not the best bet.
Also tonight, a veteran Capitol reporter gives his take on the session thus far.
You have a lot of business-oriented legislation so far that has passed, and that's about it.
We'll also delve into legislation that could provide a critical response to Florida's rising tides, and we'll find out if your school ager will be taking the state standardized test this year. I'm Tom Flanagan. Welcome to week 7 in the 9-week Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. Democrats are the minority in the Florida legislature, so much so that their number is too small to really impact any policy. But that's not stopping them from trying to sway public opinion. Lynn Hatter reports House Democratic leaders are targeting proposals like a ban on transgender kids playing school sports, criminal justice reform, and Florida's handling of the coronavirus pandemic.
Democratic Representative Carlos Guillermo-Smith has a scathing assessment of a Republican House bill that would ban transgender girls from participating in school sports. The measure is nearing a vote on the House floor, and Smith says it's a solution in search of a problem that doesn't exist. The Florida High School Athletics Association, which regulates school sports, has had rules in place since 2013.
What we do know is that based on our conversations with FHSAA, just under 20 students actually have fully gone through the process to gain approval in order to participate in team sports in their high school since the inception of the FHSAA's rules.
Democrats are planning to bring 19 amendments to the transgender sports bill. Most, if not all, are likely to fail. Representative Evan Ginney calls the proposal
more culture war nonsense. This isn't going to make anyone's life better. In fact, it is going to take a segment of our society, demonize them, and force them back into the shadows.
The culture wars have been front and center this year for Republican leaders. There's an effort to battle social media and tech companies over censorship. The fight spilled over again recently after YouTube removed a COVID roundtable hosted by Governor Ron DeSantis. The governor is now firing back.
Now, they say it's misinformation, even though Google and YouTube routinely host conspiracy theory videos ranging from the cause of the 9/11 attacks to the role that 5G networks play in causing COVID-19. You can pretty much find any misinformation under the sun on Google, YouTube. Now, Google, YouTube has not been, throughout this pandemic, repositories of truth and scientific inquiry.
Ginny, meanwhile, took aim at Dr. Scott Atlas, an ex-member of former President Donald Trump's coronavirus task force, who's become an ally of DeSantis.
Having a radiologist determine how your epidemiology is going to work is like having a podiatrist fix your teeth. It's probably not the best bet.
Atlas Monday responded to the video takedowns alongside DeSantis.
And you are entering into a phase of countries that we used to criticize severely, like the USSR, like communist China. I mean, what is going on here? I have been personally censored, many times, both on YouTube and on Twitter, for quoting sources like the World Health Organization. I mean, this is almost the end of our civilization if we have this sort of censorship, I'm afraid.
Meanwhile, efforts at criminal justice reforms have moved nowhere in the House, to the disappointment of Democratic Representative Ventrice Driscoll.
And in terms of where we are in session right now, there is still time on the clock. Listen, the Florida Legislative Black Caucus, in conjunction with the Senate and House Democratic caucuses, have been working on these issues since last summer. It's been a long time coming. We continue to work on these issues, and we will do so until the clock runs out.
There are about 3 weeks left in the legislature's regular session. Most attention is now shifting from policy fights to the state budget, the only bill lawmakers are constitutionally mandated to pass each year. I'm Lynn Hatter.
On Capitol Report, we kind of make a tradition of talking to some of the luminaries who cover the Capitol for a living, and one of them certainly is John Kennedy. He works for Gannett, the USA Today folks in charge of the Capitol Bureau there on. And John, thanks for coming on. First off, here we are, 3 weeks to go in this session, and not much going on at the Capitol today. And is it your experience that usually at this point there may be a little more of a sense of urgency, especially when you have like a $2 billion gap between the House and Senate budget versions? Is this unusual, or is this kind of the way it goes?
Well, it is an interesting time for a pause, it would seem like, in action at the Capitol. There will be more developments during the course of this week. We have a big elections bill, very controversial, that is advancing in the Senate later this week. And that's something to watch, obviously. The budget negotiations are probably going to start at some point, but it may be later than usual, because they're still in an unusual position of trying to deal with a lot of money, because they have not only $10 billion in stimulus money from the federal government, but they have $2 billion more than they had anticipated due to better-than-expected tax collections. So this legislature, which it's been experiencing a real roller coaster, in the sense that, you know, at some point last summer, it was projected to be facing a $2.7 billion budget deficit. And now here they are, deep into session, and they have, they could be having money fights over there at the Capitol. They have so much cash to spend. But this Republican legislature doesn't like to spend either. So that's a factor. Ideologically, they're talking about trying to put a lot of money into reserves and more money into infrastructure in a sort of a create jobs and trickle down kind of economy, where once people get back to work, there's going to be more possibilities, because there's going to be a lot of road construction, bridge repairs, all kinds of things like that going on.
You said the word ideology, and you would not be the first one who mentioned that as one of the touchstones of this particular legislative session. There are a lot of bills flying around, like the one that would put additional penalties on demonstrators who maybe get a little bit out of hand, and police say that this is no longer a demonstration, it's a riot, and they can really come down hard on the participants, to things like revamping the electoral system here in Florida, after Governor DeSantis even said during his State of the State address that, boy, we did a great job, now let's go and change the election laws. And you have transgender legislation that's floating around. A lot of things that really don't seem to be that endemic to Florida. Is that your impression too, or what?
Well, it does. There does seem to be a lot of issues that have been advanced by the governor that are sort of part of the whole national stage. Stuff that Fox News talks a lot about, issues that are things that really resonate with the Republican base. Today, we just had the governor teeing off on social media platforms while he was flanked by some scientists who have drawn some criticism because of their approach to COVID-19. These are scientists that were signers of the Great Barrington Declaration, which discouraged mask wearing, promoted herd immunity. So you still have a lot of that resonance of the Trump era. And a lot of the legislation that the governor is advancing falls into that category. And indeed, that so-called anti-riot legislation is another thing that's likely to come up this week in the full Florida Senate. After the Senate on Friday spent much of the day in appropriations before passing that out of that committee. That was the Senate's first look at that legislation that would allow for a lot of criminal enhancements for demonstrations that turn violent. But it's seen by Democrats, social activists, and a lot of minority community members as being something that is going to be misapplied in Florida and is going to hurt a lot of black demonstrators and demonstrators across the board to a great extent.
I think I hear you saying that a lot of this is just a prelude, a run-up to the 2022 elections in which the Republicans will have, if much of this passes, or maybe perhaps even if it doesn't, we'll have a lot of ammunition to wade into the fray saying, look at all the things that we did or tried to do. Meanwhile, Democrats will have a lot of things they can campaign against coming out of this session.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah, the Democrats also are getting some firepower out of this because of what the Republicans have sort of, you know, set the table with. The Democrats have been roundly critical of so many of these issues, and now we're even into a point where, when it comes to the budgetary process, it's kind of interesting where Democrats are chiding the Republicans for not spending this federal money appropriately. It's still sort of unclear as to where it's going to ultimately fall. That will obviously be part of the negotiations that dominate a lot of the last weeks of the session. But right now, there doesn't seem to be an interest on the part of Republican leaders to spend a lot of this money on social service programs, healthcare, things that, you know, can kind of put that money directly to Floridians. Instead, it's more of a, so far we've seen only two bills have passed out of the legislature. One is protections, legal protections for businesses from any and nursing homes for any kind of lawsuits that might emerge from the COVID-19 pandemic. It pretty much protects healthcare providers as well as companies from facing lawsuits. And the other thing that has passed so far is a big expansion of online tax collections, which the money is going in to cover a expected increase in the state's unemployment compensation taxes for businesses. So you have a lot of business-oriented legislation so far that has passed, and that's about it. Where the stimulus goes is going to be a question in the home stretch.
And that's something we'll have to watch closely, too. John, a little personal aside here, though. Of all the sessions that you have covered, and there have been a bunch, is this the weirdest as far as just the precautions that have to be placed at the Capitol to restrict access, to promote social distancing and all that sort of thing? And it's also reduced access to certainly newsmakers at the Capitol.
Yeah, it really is. You know, you have people testifying from a couple of blocks away at the Donald L. Tucker Civic Center. Remotely, they're testifying. Oddly enough, in remote testimony, you have to come to Tallahassee to testify remotely, which is a whole nother story. You know, you can't do it from you know, your home in Broward County or something like that in a big state like this. You still have to schlep to Tallahassee to sit a couple of blocks away from the Capitol to, you know, get your 30 seconds before a state committee. That is a question as to the propriety of that, but that's the rule going forward. The Capitol remains pretty much closed to the public, not too much interaction with people walking the halls, all this stuff that, you know, Tom, you and I know from years past that Capitol is a kind of a trade show atmosphere over there, typically during a legislative session, with a lot of events going on and people coming up via tour buses and you know, as well as the crowd of lobbyists that are trying to advance their issues. But none of that is going on this year. It's all you know, distanced, and that makes for strange legislating, and it makes for strange reporting sometimes when it comes to just trying to get access to people. It's not that easy.
And it leads us to pose the question, if at the end of session they drop the hanky and nobody sees it fall, is it really sine die?
That's true. The hanky, signy, die is going to be like the tree in the forest, I think.
John Kennedy with Gannett, the folks who bring you USA Today, the Capitol Bureau Chief there. And thank you for joining us today on Capitol Report. And hang in there, John, just a few more weeks to go.
Thank you, Tom. Talk to you soon.
Still to come on Capitol Report, environmentalists say a bill to boost communities' resiliency to sea level rise and flooding could be a conversation starter on climate change.
It includes a lot of vital items that we've been asking for and the environmental community has been begging for 20 years.
And it appears students and schools will get a break this year when it comes to those critical Florida standardized tests. The situation for teachers, though, may be a bit more, shall we say, fluid.
A little bit of questions surrounding it when it comes to teachers and how the state test requirements are going to affect teacher pay and teacher evaluation, which, of course, are coming up at the end of this school year.
A bill to address the impacts of sea level rise and flooding has been approved by the Florida legislature and is heading to the governor's desk. There it's expected to be signed into law. Environmentalists say the bill is a step in the right direction, but add more needs to be done to address the root cause of climate change. Robbie Gaffney reports.
The proposal does many things. It creates the Resilient Florida Grant Program, which would give grants to local governments to plan and develop projects aimed at combating the impacts of sea level rise and flooding. It also would task the Department of Environmental Protection with creating a statewide assessment that identifies areas that are vulnerable to sea level rise and flooding. The department would also have to create a resilience plan with projects proposed by local governments and other entities and submit it to the governor and legislature. House Speaker Chris Sprouse has been working on getting the proposal passed this session.
For the first time, Florida will have a statewide plan to address flooding, and we will dedicate $100 million a year to that cause.
Jonathan Weber is with Florida Conservation Voters, an environmentalist group. He says the resiliency plan outlined in the bill is an important first step.
It includes a lot of vital items that we've been asking for and the environmental community has been begging for 20 years. But the fact that it's here, it's happening, is really great news for Florida. It includes a lot of really important tools that local governments are going to be able to use to better protect their communities.
Gianna Trichino is with the Clio Institute, a nonprofit that focuses on climate change. She agrees that the proposal is long overdue.
We do hope that the legislature continues to uplift these conversations and eventually include next steps that will advance comprehensive policy solutions, such as investing in clean and renewable energy systems, to truly prepare the state for the changing and warming climate that we're all about to see.
David Colin is with Sierra Club Florida. He says the bill is good, but hopes lawmakers in the future will attempt to identify the cause of sea level rise and do something about it.
We obviously believe that we know what the cause of sea level rise is, and the International Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, the consensus of something like 97% of the scientists in the world that deal in this area are absolutely convinced that fossil fuel and greenhouse gas emissions are the cause of this rapid increase in global temperature and climate change.
Colin hopes lawmakers will consider transitioning away from fossil fuels. Trichino says while the bill could expand conversations on climate change, it also comes at the cost of reducing dollars going towards affordable housing programs.
We really just want to emphasize that while we absolutely 100% need permanent funding solutions for sea level rise and flooding, we cannot be truly resilient as a state without continuing to invest in affordable housing projects throughout the state. It's a problem within a problem.
The Resilient Florida Grant Program will be paid through the documentary stamp tax. That tax helps pay for many things, including affordable housing programs. The dollars going into those programs are being reduced permanently to pay for the grants. An initial proposal would have left the programs with around $140 million. That's been recently bumped to $200 million. Florida Conservation Voters Weber says that's still a cut.
as good as the proposal might be, again, they are still taking a lot of money away from a really needy cause. And the thing that, gets me the most about this is that there's $10 billion coming in from President Biden's American Rescue Plan that is specifically earmarked to do things that they are taking money from affordable housing to do, like wastewater infrastructure and sewage upgrades, things like that. And unfortunately, the legislature is choosing to take the money away from affordable housing instead of use the money from the federal government specifically for this reason.
Democrats have also proposed using federal dollars to pay for Republican leadership's environmental initiatives. But Republicans are set on using those dollars on one-time expenses. The environmental initiatives would be recurring. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
The pace of lawmaking activity ramps up tomorrow as we hear from Gina Jordan.
Here's a look at what's coming up in the Florida legislature. A bill clarifies reporting and registration requirements for sexual offenders. Anyone convicted of certain sexual offenses must register as a sex offender upon their release from prison. A recent ruling by a Florida appellate court allows a sex offender to avoid registration simply by refusing to pay any court-imposed fine. The bill clarifies that an offender's failure to pay a fine does not relieve him or her of having to register as a sexual offender. The House will hold a floor session, taking up a hotly debated bill that would ban transgender females from girls' or women's high school and college sports. Dubbed the Fairness in Women's Sports Act, the proposal would make participation contingent on determining a student's biological sex, a disputed term that refers to the sex assigned at birth. The House will also consider a proposal that would allow high schools to offer prayers over public address systems before athletic championship games. The measure comes amid a long-running legal battle over a decision in 2016 by the Florida High School Athletic Association to block Cambridge Christian School of Tampa from offering such a prayer before a football championship game at Orlando's Camping World Stadium. The Senate Education Appropriations Subcommittee will consider allowing free online courses at state universities for veterans, active duty military members, and others who, quote, went another direction, unquote, instead of finishing degrees. The proposal is titled the State University Free Seat Program. And finally, a bill targets corporate espionage, including trafficking in trade secrets. House and Senate sponsors say the legislation looks to address foreign influence on state government and the potential theft of technologies being developed at Florida universities and research institutions. That's some of what's happening tomorrow at the Capitol. I'm Gina Jordan.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, well, you may recall that last week, Florida Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran issued an emergency order, and that was to waive state testing requirements for high school seniors to graduate and for third graders to advance on to fourth grade. And state lawmakers, educators, parents, they've all been expressing support for the measure, as a lot of students aren't taking exams in person, of course, due to the pandemic. We get the latest on this from Capitol reporter Valerie Crowder. And what's going on with this, Valerie? What was the kind of the motivation behind all this?
A lot of students across the state have opted out of taking the exams. They're actually not completing the state test in person. Those state tests are required to be taken in person. And due to the pandemic, a lot of the students who have been in virtual school or taking their classes online from home, their parents didn't feel too comfortable with them going in person to take their test as they've been studying from home. So that was kind of the motivation behind this emergency order that Education Commissioner Richard Corcoran issued last week. And there were a lot of people excited about this measure. There's been a little bit of questions surrounding it when it comes to teachers and how the state test requirements are going to affect teacher pay and teacher evaluations, which of course are coming up at the end of this school year. And a lot of the concern is that we're exempting students from taking these tests to graduate, or in the case of third graders, to move on to fourth grade. but we're not exempting teachers from having to basically be evaluated using these same standardized tests. So right now, the Florida Education Association is seeking more clarification, and I spoke with the president of the FEA, Andrew Spahr, earlier today, and he kind of explained what they're after and why they think it's important for teachers to get this same exemption.
Our students have faced lots of disruption because of COVID, because of quarantining. We've had a lot of students who were online for a period of time or still may be learning online. And so to say that a student's performance this year should be tied to teacher evaluations just makes no sense. And so it is our hope that the commissioner and the Department of Education will clarify that particular provision of the emergency order or modify it if necessary.
Okay, Valerie, the other thing, of course, about testing in Florida is that it also is used as a yardstick for schools and teachers, which you had already mentioned. Is that segment of the population going to be held harmless as far as the testing is concerned, that it won't have the same kind of clout that it would under normal circumstances?
Yes, that is correct. When it comes to schools, they are not going to be held to the same standard this school year as they would in normal school years. So the school performance ratings are addressed by this emergency order. The school performance ratings will remain the same as they were before the COVID-19 pandemic. That means schools ranked as low performing or excellent will keep those designations through the next school year. If schools want to opt in to having the standardized test affect their school performance rating for this school year, they can do so. They just need to apply with the State Department of Education if they choose to opt in. And that would be schools that are low performing and maybe have improved during the pandemic. If that's happened, then those schools, as long as their application is approved by the State Department of Education, they'll be able to opt into the school performance rating for this year.
We sure do appreciate your update on that, and this will mean a lot to parents and kids, school districts, and teachers as well as we move on forward. Capitol reporter Valerie Crowder on Capitol Report. Thanks so much, Valerie.
Thank you, Tom.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Valerie Crowder, Robbie Gaffney, Blaise Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Technical assistance for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Please join us every evening at this time throughout the 2021 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management. Advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org. And from Floridians for Lawsuit Reform. Property insurance bills in Florida have been skyrocketing due to rising litigation affecting millions of Floridians. Learn more about solutions at fltortreform.com.